All right, so just over a week ago, we had the total lunar eclipse. The moon turned blood red. It was big as a pizza in the sky. And it's the longest total eclipse we're going to get this century in our lifetime. And so people got up at 4:30 in the morning. They oohed and aahed. They took pictures. They posted on Facebook. But not me. 4:30 in the morning. It was too early. It was too cold. And you could watch it on YouTube anyway. So my family and I, we stayed asleep. But afterwards, I felt bad. I felt like I had failed as a human being. What sort of person does not get up at 4:30 in the morning to see a once-in-a-lifetime spectacular natural phenomenon? What sort of father does not wake up their children? So I felt like I'd failed as a parent, failed as a human being, and it led to a lot of existential dread. Where is my life going? And maybe you wonder the same thing. Where is our life going? And at the end of our life, how will we answer this question? Did I do okay? And what will other people say about our life? So it's a question about validation. Validation is the buzzword right now, and for all the right reasons, because we need to be validated. We too wonder how our life is going. And at the end of our life, how will we answer this question? How will other people answer this question? Did I do okay? So our question today is, well, how can we find validation? The validation we look for. As Craig said, this will come in the form of a 20-minute talk where we will look at validation from a Christian worldview. And afterwards, you can ask me any question that you want. So typically, we can look for validation in three areas. And the first two are good areas, but I think the third way is the best way. So how can we find validation? Well, the first way is to find words of affirmation for other people to affirm us and say, hey, you did okay. Now, for a long time, I avoided Facebook. Yes, I know there are good parts to Facebook, but it just wasn't me. I did not see the need. So for a long time, I did not do Facebook. But then my employers said, you've got to get onto Facebook. We need you to promote our events. So, okay, reluctantly, about 2 years ago, I got onto Facebook. And then I thought, this thing is amazing. I wake up in the morning and I'm on Facebook. I'm eating breakfast, I'm on Facebook. On the way to work, I'm on Facebook. At work, I'm on Facebook. On the way home, I'm on Facebook. Eating dinner, I'm on Facebook. Watching TV, I'm still on Facebook. In bed, I'm on Facebook. And my wife says, this is terrible. We don't talk anymore. So I signed her up for a Facebook account. And now we talk. Now, as you know, the whole point of Facebook is you post and people will like your post. There's no point posting if no one notices your post. And so when you post and you get a lot of likes, you actually feel good. You get a dopamine hit. You get affirmed. If you post and no one likes it, you actually feel bad. Like no one noticed it. No one affirmed me. What is the point of posting if no one likes your post? Well, according to Hugh Mackay, he's an Australian social commentator, in his book, What Makes Us Tick, the 10 desires that drive us, the number one desire is the desire, the need to be affirmed, to be noticed, to be recognized, to be somebody, to be validated by others. And here's the great cruel irony of life. While it's ridiculously easy to get thousands of likes on Facebook from people we barely know, it's also ridiculously hard to get affirmed and validated by people that we do know, our closest friends and family, from those we need to hear it most from. I'm at a stage of life where most of my friends now, well, this hit me just 2 years ago. I turned up to a wedding and I thought, oh my gosh, it's happened. I'm a friend of the parents. I'm not a friend of the couple. In fact, I don't know the couple. I'm a friend of the parents. I've become that guy, the guy that turns up to the wedding. Well, I know the parents, but not the couple. So where the couple will be going, who is this bozo coming to our wedding? And the parents go, he's one of our friends. Well, I don't want to invite him. I want to invite my friends. No, you're inviting him. So I'm that guy now where I don't know the couple. I sit at the table with all the friends of the parents talking through the speeches. I've become that guy. But it also means I'm at the stage of life where most of my friends, their kids are moving out, getting married, and their homes are becoming empty. And on the one hand, that's great, you get your bedroom back. But on the other hand, not only is there loneliness, but they're starting to ask questions like, did we do okay? They say things to me like, it was harder for us. We didn't have the parenting books they have now. We didn't have the parenting seminars they have now. We did the best we could, but was it good enough? Did we do okay? And while you might tell them they did okay, I tell them they did okay, they actually need to hear it from their children. And in the cruel irony of life, somehow children would be the last people to tell their parents that they did okay. As you heard, I work one day a week as a surgical assistant. What is a surgical assistant? I hold the leg for the surgeon while the surgeon operates on it. So if you took your car to a mechanic and they changed the oil on your car, someone has to hold up the bonnet. And it's the same with the surgeon. When he operates on your leg, someone has to hold the leg. And that is my job. A trained monkey can do what I do. And so the nurses at work, they see the surgeon operating and they think, yeah, I can see how that took 6 years of med school. They look at the anaesthetist. Yeah, I can see how that took 6 years of med school. And then they look at me holding my leg and think, how on earth does that take 6 years of med school? A trained monkey can do what that guy is doing. And so in the hierarchy of doctors, and there is a very strict hierarchy in medicine, I am at the bottom of the rung. Have you noticed those ads that say, not just a GP? Do you know why they say that? Because they are just a GP. And so there is a hierarchy. It usually goes surgeons, physicians, just a GPs, and then there's me, the surgical assistant, who couldn't even become a GP. So I'm at the bottom of the rung. So the other day, I was assisting a surgeon, and we had begun our medical careers together as junior doctors. And while my medical career had gone down, his had gone up. He is now the surgeon, at the top of his game, running his own practice, well-respected, and very successful. And during the operation, I said to him, tell me. They tell me it's lonely at the top. Is it true? And he looked at me and said, it is very true. And again, that's a cruel irony of life. We climb the mountain, we jump the hoops, and we get there. There's no one there to affirm us. There are no peers left because you've climbed the mountain. While nurses might be happy to tell him he's done okay, I'm happy to tell him he's done okay, but he needs to hear it from his peers. And we climb the mountain, there's no one there to affirm you, to say you did okay. So there's a second way we can look for validation, and it's through our achievements, what we have done. And so there's a fire in your house. What will you take out of your house? If you only allowed one thing, what will you take? Will it be your wedding photos? Well, for me, it's this thing. It's a beer mug. It's a trophy. And you can't see the words, but this is what the words say. Sydney University Football Club, best forward, fifth grade, 1995, Sam Chan. This is my proudest achievement. It shows that a short little Asian from the western suburbs was able to mix it with a big Caucasian Australians from the eastern suburbs private schools playing their game and beating them at their game. That is my proudest achievement. It validates me. So what are your proudest achievements? Maybe you got A's at school when everyone else got B's, C's and D's. Maybe you got a high distinction at university when other people got passes or credits. Maybe you're in a skilled job, others are in unskilled labour. Maybe your children are musical, other people's children are not musical. Maybe your children got into selective schools, other people's children did not get into selective schools. We have achievements that validate us and make us proud. And here's the way achievements work. It means somehow we are in the front half of the bell curve and in comparison, other people in the back half of the bell curve. But there's a problem with achievements. Sooner or later, there will be a bell curve big enough where we're in the back half of the bell curve and no longer in the front half of the bell curve. See, for achievements to work, I have to be the front half of the bell curve, but you can point out my proudest achievement, say, Sam, just look at it. It says Sydney University Football Club. It's not the Waratahs. It's not the Wallabies. And it says best forward. The forwards, aren't they the short, big, slow guys? The backs, they're the tall, fast, good-looking ones who score all the points. And it says fifth grade, really, how many grades were there? It's not the fourths, it's not the thirds, it's not the seconds, and it's not the first. And it's 1995. That's almost a quarter of a century ago. Move on, get over it. This is so pathetic. And the thing with achievements is it relies on us being a big fish in a small pond, but sooner or later there will be a pond big enough where we're the small fish. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book David and Goliath, Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants, he makes this powerful point. He spends a whole chapter talking about why he thinks it's not good to put children into selective schools, because they actually take them out of an environment where they're the big fish in a small pond, where they're excelling, flourishing, enjoying their studies, and then you put them in another environment where they're a small fish in a very big pond, and now they're in the back half of the bell curve, and they're discouraged, they're disempowered, they give up because it's too overwhelming and they don't flourish anymore. So that's a problem with achievements. And there are many problems with achievements. Even when you've achieved, you've actually got to keep on achieving to keep your place. See, surgeons are at the top of the hierarchy of the medical profession, but even in the surgeon pond, there's a hierarchy. They're always jostling for positions. So every month, the stats come out in the hospital on how many knee operations you've done. And so you've done 10 that month, but your buddy's done 30 that month. Now you feel, oh my gosh, I'm at the bottom of the pile. And the guy doing 30, he always tells me, hey, I had the most knee operations this month. Meaning they are so insecure. They have to tell me just to validate themselves. We have friends and their daughter was consistently coming ducks, top of her year, in an elite private girls' high school in the eastern suburbs of Sydney. And you think, that's fantastic. That's every parent's dream. That's every child's dream, to ducks an elite private girls' school in the eastern suburbs. Except the pressure of now having to come ducks first every year was too much. It was too overwhelming. It actually destroyed her. They had to take her out of that school to put her in another school where she could just relax and be nobody and hide in the crowd, because her whole identity and status had become conflated with her achievements. She had to keep on achieving to be somebody. She couldn't come second or third anymore. You and I would be happy with second or third, but for her, that would be a failure. She had to be ducks every year, and it overwhelmed her. It destroyed her. They had to change schools. And even if you do hit the top and you do stay there, you find a blur feeling. Now, this is Friedrich Nietzsche, and philosophers don't use the word blur, so this is how he words it. He says, you will discover the melancholy of all things completed. I love watching rugby, and this is Australia's proudest moment. The 1991 World Cup, Nick Farr-Jones, David Campese, they won the Rugby World Cup, so they were the best rugby nation out of all the rugby playing nations. And they won it at the home of rugby, London, Twickenham, in front of the Queen. The Queen gave them this trophy. This is it. You have climbed the mountain. And Nick Farr-Jones, in a BBC interview, said it was a blur feeling, melancholy. This moment where you thought, oh, is that it? Is this what we work for? So when you climb the mountain, you pass the hoops, finish the exams, get the corner offers, we too would discover that, oh, is that it? I've hit the top of the mountain. I thought there would be something more. And Timothy Keller in New York says it's worse than that. You also discover, I'm the same person I was yesterday. It didn't change me. It actually didn't give me the validation I was looking for. So there's a third way we can look for validation. It's this. Rather than us look for validation, validation finds us. These are green tea ice cream mochis. They are just a delight. You have the mochi outside shell, soft, chewy. Then you have the green tea flavored ice cream on the inside, firm, cold, creamy. Ah! Oh. And for a long time, you had to go to Japan to get these. So you couldn't get them in Australia, but now they have come to us in Australia. You can get them at Coles, Woolworths, 7-Eleven. So rather than have to go to Japan for your green tea mochi, they have come to us. And maybe it's the same with validation. Rather than us going on a journey to find validation, maybe validation comes and finds us. And this is the Christian claim. In the Christian worldview, validation comes and finds us, because Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came and found us. Now, I've scanned the internet and I found this picture, and I reckon if Jesus was alive today, this is what he would look like. He'll be a short, tanned, Middle Eastern male, just wandering around the countryside of Palestine speaking Aramaic. And I'm just waiting for the day, because I just got this picture off the internet, that some guy in the audience is going to finally say, hey, that's my picture. And I'm going, oh, it's Jesus. Jesus is here. You go, no, that's my picture. Okay, but anyway, this is what Jesus would look like if he was around today. And the Christian worldview says this: Jesus Christ, the Son of God, became one of us, a human being. You can't get more validation than that. The Son of God becoming one of us. The next claim in the Christian worldview is Jesus died for us, rose again, and now lives for us. And that validates us. But there's a subtle nuance there. Jesus dies for us to save us because we're not okay. And that means it's okay for us to say we're not okay. We don't have to pretend to be perfect. Jesus is perfect, so we don't have to pretend to be perfect. And then he lives for us to make us okay. That validates us. And Jesus also says he puts his spirit in us and we become one with him and we join his family. We enter his kingdom. And now we have a purpose here to set up his love, mercy, and justice on this planet. And that gives us a validation to be here. So these are the words of Jesus. I got this from a chapter in the Bible called John 15. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Jesus validates us by what he says. He says, I love you. And he validates us by what he does. He dies for us in our place. He also says this: you did not choose me, but I chose you. Unconditional love, not based on who we are or our performance. He validates us. He chooses us. And he says this: I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. We become one with him, join his family, and he changes us every day to be more and more like him. Just the other week, I got my Australian passport. I renewed it. It came in the mail. And the passport validates me. It says, you are Australian. You know, sometimes I don't feel Australian. I look in the mirror and I think, you know, I look very Asian. But the passport says, no, you are Australian. I'm not very good at Australian sports. I'm not good at AFL. I'm not good at cricket. I'm not good at surfing. But it says, it doesn't matter. You are Australian. Sometimes I don't feel Australian. When I take my kids to the primary school, they sing the Australian National Anthem. And Australians don't like singing out loud. So I like to make the musicians feel good, but I'll sing out loud. I'll take one for the team. So I bellow out verse one. That moment I feel very Australian. And then they play a verse two. I think, when did we have a verse two in the National Anthem? And I don't know the verses. And I'm all quiet. And now I feel very un-Australian. But the passport sort of says it does matter. You are Australian. And that's what Jesus does for us. He validates us. Doesn't matter how we feel. Doesn't matter who we are. He validates us. Yeah. I love you. I died for you. I live for you. And every day I make you more and more like me. So this is where it's become real for me in my life. I've got three young boys. And I've put them in Saturday sports, AFL. And every parent, when they put their kids in a team Saturday sport, there's this amazing moment. As you watch your kid play, you think, oh my goodness, my kid is very ordinary. He's not very good at this. See, when you play with your kid in the backyard, you think, my kid is amazing. He can kick, he can catch, because that's because your sample is one, N equals one. Then he's amazing. But now you put him in the bell curve on a Saturday in a team sport, you think, very ordinary, is below average, I think. And then at that moment, your validation is threatened because your son is very ordinary. But then you think, you know what? It doesn't matter. I love him just the way he is. And at the end of the game, I said, hey, how's the game? And my son said, oh, it was so much fun. I thought, you know what? That's all you have to know. In fact, that's what life is. Just being the best we can be with what we're given by God doesn't mean we have to be the best there is. Just the best we can be. It also became real for me about 5 years ago. As you can see, I'm short, Asian. I'm also turning 52 this year. That shocks a few people. It also shocks me because it means I've lived more years than there are left for me to live. I'm past the halfway mark. And about 5 years ago, I was in between work. So for the first 25 years of my life, I lived the Asian high-achieving immigrant narrative. Study hard, stay out of trouble, get a university, became a doctor, worked about 4 years as a doctor. And then for a variety of reasons, I think I burnt out. I think it doesn't matter. I'll go into Christian ministry. That's plan B. So I did some further studies, got a PhD in theology, taught in a Bible college for about 10 years, and that ended on a sour note. And I thought, wow, okay, I've tried secular work, sacred work, I've blown it. There's nothing left. There is no plan C. Where do I go now? And so I thought, you know what? I will become a surgeon. I'll finish my specialization and I'll finish a chapter that was never finished in my life, and that will validate me. It'll give me security. I can put my kids in any school I want in Sydney. We can have overseas holidays. But my neighbor, who wasn't a Christian, but he was a careers advisor, he looked me in the eye and said, why do you want to be a surgeon? And I couldn't look him in the eye and answer truthfully, because I knew my real reason was I was looking for validation. Yeah. I wanted to be validated. And I thought, you know what? It's not going to give me the validation I'm looking for. It's going to take me away from my family. My children won't know me. You know what? That's the whole beauty of being validated by Jesus. I can just choose a job I want, and I don't need the job to validate me. I can be the best I can be with what God has given me, but I don't have to be the best there is. So this is my family. I'm married to Stephanie. We've been married 21 years. I've got three young boys, Toby, Cooper, and Jonty, soon to be 11, 9, and 7. And for a while, I started doing this daddy date ritual. So on a Saturday, I would take one of them out on a daddy date. We'd have a breakfast in a cafe. Then we'd go to a park and play. And then I'd take them to a toy and buy them a toy. And they loved it. But then after a while, the meaning changed. They were always going, Dad, Dad, when's my next daddy date? For my next daddy date, can you buy me a toy truck? Can you buy me some toy Lego? Can you buy me an app for my iPhone or something? Anything? What has happened? You have changed the meaning of daddy date. You've taken a good thing and you made it mean something else that it wasn't meant to mean. And that could be our issue in life as well. God gives us many good things, family, friends, and work. But if we change the meaning that these things are meant to give us the validation we're looking for, we will destroy them and they will destroy us. But the Christian message is this. Our validation comes from Jesus. He loves us. He died for us. He lives for us. And if we trust and follow him, we can be part of his team, his family, his kingdom. And that's all the validation we need. And so then we can enjoy the good things God has given us. Family, friends, and work. Don't make more of them what they are, validation, because we'll destroy them or they'll destroy us. But just be the best we can be with what God has given us. It doesn't mean we have to be the best, because all the validation we are looking for comes from Jesus.